This program is part of Full Service Radio, an internet radio station and podcast network with over 32 weekly shows broadcasting from the lobby of the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. All of our hosts are Washington, D.C. locals, covering stuff like music, arts, culture, identity, politics, and so much more. Visit fullserviceradio.org for all of our programming and enjoy the show. Full Service Radio is also proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com. That's simplecast.com.
Welcome to Foreign National on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm one of your two hosts, Eric Brunner-Yang, and we're here with my wife,
Seda.
And today we have an amazing guest, Musa Kua, and I'll let Seda do the intro on that.
I will do the introduction of somebody who I've always really looked up to, a mentor, and just a legend in the Cambodian social political movement. Her name is Musa Kua. She is a member of the opposition party in Cambodia, and if anybody gets a chance to read up on it, but this year has been a very interesting one. You know, the last couple of years has been a very, very interesting one, if not the last over 30 years. And really just Cambodian history in general, but, you know, as far as the future of Cambodia, you know, Musa Kua is quite a legend, an icon, and just a great leader, a great representation of Cambodian women and just Cambodians.
Okay, so before we get started, I just want to tell you a little bit about what our show is about. So the idea, obviously, the show is called Foreign National, right? Which is one person moving to a new place to become a citizen, not necessarily citizen, but immersed in a part of that culture that is not theirs. And so a little bit of that, we talk about how that translates to how that's changed food in America. Not necessarily the idea of how does a Kampot pepper make it to the United States, but how do we tell the story and how does that story told about, you know, what it took for Cambodian food to come from Cambodia and then to end up in a place like Makedo, for example. For those who are listening, that's one of our businesses that specializes in interpretive Taiwanese and Cambodian food. So it's kind of like a food show, but not really. It's more about the stories of people like yourself who have made an impact in how people view a country or also view an experience, and especially more personal, how my wife views herself as a Cambodian American, and then how do we end up telling that story through what we do for a living.
That's great. Chumriap Sua means hello in Cambodian. It is a great pleasure to be with you, Seda and Eric, my two niece and nephew in Cambodian. When we, that's a sign of respect and love and family. And I'm so pleased to be here. And you have fed me very well, given me comfort at a time when I really need it, which is Cambodia moving forward and going through changes. But however, our food, our culture, our image, are Cambodians and our identity. And I realize that we are here in America. I am also an American citizen, lived and studied on the West Coast at UC Berkeley. But went home for over 30 years and now back again in exile, political exile.
Yes. What a crazy year for Cambodian politics. Another crazy year in Cambodian politics.
It like goes in these different phases of the political evolution and revolution in Cambodia. But can I, before we get into your current exile status, I just want to take it back to a memory where I campaigned with you in Cambodia. And it was the first time I was hungry. Like legitimately, I was hungry because every time I go back to Cambodia, I get overfed. I mean, you know how it is in Cambodia. You eat all day. You're snacking all day. Mm-hmm. It's the only place they eat fruit because somebody's always handing it to you. It's fresh. It's there. Mm-hmm. You order, when you purchase it, you don't buy one apple. You buy pounds and pounds, kilos of them.
A whole boat. And,
right. I mean, if you're not eating, they're looking at you like, are you okay? Why aren't you eating? Or you look like you're hungry. You look like you need a snack. And the first time when I was ever hungry in Cambodia was when I campaigned with you, because it just goes to show that you were just ready to do the work. We woke up, we got in the car, you stopped for before we headed out into the countryside, we stopped at a place to get fresh numbao, buns, and that's all we had for the day. And I thought to myself, oh my God. And by the end of the day, I was like, I can't believe I've only eaten one meal. This is the first time in Cambodia I've ever only eaten one thing all day. Yeah. But it was worth it, obviously. It was just a really funny thing to me.
Speaking of Cambodian snacking culture, and I remember it was during that same time, I think, there was some land rights protesting happening, and there's this video that you sent me of the day that you guys were actually, both of you, I think, were at this protest. And it's like hundreds of people, and the police and the protesters all just protesting. And then 12 o'clock hit, and the YouTube video just shows everyone just stopped protesting to take a 30-minute lunch break, and then dispersed, and then had lunch, and then came back and started protesting again.
Yeah, they take napping and snacking very seriously.
Because we wake up very early, by 4:30, 5 o'clock, we are up in the morning and out on the rice field and do whatever, cook our first pot of rice porridge, and then by 11 o'clock it's so hot, and then by midday at 1 o'clock, if you call anybody and want to do work around siesta, that's the no-no. Yeah, so we eat and we take a siesta.
Right. I remember too, when I was like, oh man, I only have a couple of days to be here. I need to find Obama, because that was the time also, and President Obama went to visit. Yeah. I'm creeping and I'm stalking everyone, and I was like, I gotta go to Bunka. And Bunka is a very, very controversial part of land, one of the several where they've relocated several Cambodians, and it's just very controversial. But I went because it used to be a lake, the company that had bought it, pumped the lake with a bunch of sand and, for a land development. I went to go check it out because I knew a lot of women were going to protest. I mean, women have been on the forefront in Cambodia that have actually been making a lot of these movements, been behind the movements, behind the protests, really pushing, because, it's not... To Cambodians, it's not just about the individual, it's about their families. I mean, now, you're threatening women, and not just the women, but their families. So they've really been empowered to come together. If you're going to go to protest, you're going to see a woman out there kind of leading the charge. So there's, I went over there, I was so excited. I heard there was going to be a protest because Obama's in town. They really wanted to raise the attention. They're putting SOS on their tin roofs. I go there, nobody was there, and because it was lunch break, I was like, I should have known better. What was I thinking?
But however, life, we have a slogan, and the campaign runs with that slogan that says, land is life. And we sang that song all the time. We Cambodian people have land and have farm. This is our life. And that's the song. And the need of the people to stay on that land, their land, is really, really the core, the soul of this the movement for change in Cambodia. And that movement for change in Cambodia is now, for the Cambodian government, a color revolution that the government wants to oppress, wants to crack down, and that's why I am in exile. But if there is no land, then where's life? Where is our identity? And the investors, Chinese investors mainly, are right there in Cambodia, destroying the spirit, destroying our soul, destroying our identity, and that's not, we cannot accept it.
So tell us a little bit about the lead up to your exile. It's in the last year, especially with Trump coming into office. It was especially tough for me because I didn't necessarily think so much about the effects here in the States. Like that was already on my mind, but a big pain for me was to think about what type of effect it had on Cambodia.
I think more importantly too, let's do a little bit of just background, right? So I think in general, I think most people understand and know about the Khmer Rouge and how and kind of that story of Cambodia. And then do you think you could just give us a small history lesson about what post, how do we get from post Khmer Rouge, where everyone goes back into Phnom Penh, government goes back into power, and then how do we end up where we are today, and kind of the role you have played through that time?
So the Khmer Rouge are Cambodians. Yeah, so that's why when it's a genocide, the genocide that lasted for 3.5 years, that killed over close to 2 million people, including my parents, your relatives. No one was left without anyone in the family intact, not touched by the genocide. They wanted to have Cambodia start, begin from year zero, meaning no ownership, private ownership, no money, no currency, nothing. It's life in the commune, yeah? Very, very ultra-left, communist. Then it was the Khmer Rouge, Vietnam came over and liberated Cambodia from the Khmer Rouge, but in Cambodia stayed because of that occupation by Vietnam. Cambodia was lived through international embargo for 10 years, from 1980 to 1990. Not until 1993 did we finally have a UN-sponsored election with the Paris Peace Agreement that brought the first election democratically held, run, and we, the Democrats, won. So we got rid of the Khmer Rouge. But the However, the communist state, because they were second in after the election, they won second place. And then over all the elections, they came back to power until today. So today they are totally in power, but they have changed themselves into Democrats, because there's open market and free economy and all that. There have been some great achievements. Children are going back to school, and so on. However, the current government led by Hun Sen, who's been in power for over 30 years, is not willing at all to have to open Cambodia up for real multi-party democracy. So they kicked us out, although we at the opposition, the Cambodia National Rescue Party, won the last election in 2013, and then the 2017, which is local elections. This means that the movement for change led by Cambodian youth that represent over 70% of the population is an incredible cry for change. And that's why the next election in 2018, 6 months from now, we are definitely going to win. That's why they kicked us out. They dissolved our party. The opposition no longer exists. They dissolved every radio station that is independent, over 20 radio stations. There's no way we can be speaking like this, talking like this in Cambodia right now, free independent media. So now I am here in Washington, D.C., in exile, but running around lobbying for sanctions, economic sanctions, and then visa sanctions and freeze of assets of the high-ranking officials in Cambodia whose names are involved in corruption, violations of human rights, gross violation of human rights like land grabbing, kicking thousands and hundreds and thousands of families out of their land. So we hope that the international community will take stronger action, but we are satisfied, quite pleased with the American government for being the first one to impose visa sanctions and freezing of assets. And we're moving toward economic sanctions because Cambodia exports over worth of $620 million garments, shoes, clothes, you name it, like the Gap, Banana Republic, all these names are here. But our workers are working hard from 10 to 12 hours a day, making less than 3 hours a day. So there's been a movement of workers as well. We are behind a movement of workers, and so that's why we are also kicked out of politics. We are banned from politics for 5 years.
Is that your current situation right now? You're actually for 5 years and not allowed.
For 5 years, not allowed. And not allowed to go home either. I couldn't be arrested any time. But besides talking about the situation in Cambodia, we are also talking about the Cambodian communities, the diaspora in all over the world, especially in the, this area. East Coast, West Coast, the biggest community in Cambodian communities are in Lowell, Massachusetts, in Minnesota. I'm going there this weekend. In Long Beach, very, very big. Next weekend, we will be there. Everywhere. And they have really, they are still very Cambodians. The food, I can go into any home. I can have a five-course meal. The really basic meal that you could have now really is Cambodians is in the homes of the Cambodian communities outside of Cambodia, because you have really fresh everything. But then there's a fusion, a transformation of Cambodian food, but the basic ingredients such as the prahok, like the anchovies, and the fish sauce and all that, the lemongrass, the mint, and all these flavors are there.
Well, I really appreciate that very robust background. I think, like, I get it in tidbits from Zeta, but she's so passionate sometimes. She just go on and on. And I see her cheeks getting redder and redder as you talk. And every time she gets really angry, her legs start shaking. And I just, you know, I know that we really wanted to go back to Cambodia this year, because we do some stuff with Caring for Cambodia with Makedo to try to get our chefs and team leaders there to understand.
Oh, I've been to Makedo. In fact, I look forward to being there. I'm really impressed by the homemade sauce and the prahok, and the food that you bring here are really authentic, based with some form of fusion, which is great.
You guys heard that from Musuko yourself. Yes. So the next time somebody tries to challenge us about this, I get very deep about it, because for me, I always say, you know, food is just part of the conversation. If you
very
can't
much.
See that this is a perspective and that we care about the people, you know, and that the food is just the food. It's, you know, that's the only thing that I hope that we get to kind of push for when it comes to Makedo.
Yeah, I think there's always this challenge that that the food should be more Cambodian, but I don't want to be the person that's representing Cambodian food here in Washington, D.C. I'm happy to show the story of Cambodian food, but me not actually being Cambodian, I don't want to be that person. There are people like Andy Ricker, who is a chef based out of Portland, and he somehow... I mean, he is, and it is amazing, but he has this place called Pak Pak, but he has kind of become one of the foremost experts of Northern Thai cooking in America. And I think he is very Thai in spirit, and speaks Thai, and I think he represents, I think he kind of is Thai. But, I don't want to be that person for Cambodian food, because I feel like there's an amazing... lady in Brooklyn now. She has this pop-up called Krung, and I think she should be that kind of person to really kind of forefront more modern Cambodian cooking, and I'm happy to get that conversation started, but I don't want to be that person that people come to Makedo and be like, oh my god, this isn't authentic, and that's not the point for us.
No, definitely it's fusion, definitely. But you keep the main ingredients. When you taste lemongrass, the lemongrass is there. When the recipe calls for mint, the mint is there. And it's not easy to get it fresh. But it is fresh at Makedo, and that's why I look forward to going back. And what is really important in Cambodian cuisine is that it is very regional. From the south, the west, and the north, but at the same time, because Cambodia in many big cities, so you have a mixed culture of Chinese, of Vietnamese, of French, you know, that's why. And then, in fact, in Cambodia, it's really difficult to find real Cambodian food, unless you go to the villages. And then in the villages, you sit under the mango tree, and whatever is out there, they fix it for you. But you can't go to a restaurant under a mango tree and demand the real taste of Cambodia. But so fusion, it's fine with me.
That's funny, because I actually say the same thing, is that when you want to go to Cambodia, you know, these days, I always say that it's a luxury now that people get to go out to eat. So when they go out to eat, they're actually not looking for Cambodian food because they're cooking that for themselves at home.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Whatever is around the rice field, whatever, is literally, there's a pot, a soup, like you say, kreung is the basic ingredient of lemongrass or turmeric or ferumdeng and all, galangang, mixed all together. And then you... different, you put other ingredients, but that's difficult to make. And what I really like is not the kreung, but it's more the fresh fish from a tamarind tree, the fresh fish, always fish. When you wake up, you have rice porridge with fish. And then lunch, if there's no fish, you say, where is the fish? Dinner, if there's no fish, where is the fish? You know, but then you can do so many things with fish. But at the same time, we don't eat big chunk of meat, because it's just not the way we cook. Mm-hmm. And also because we feel that it's bourgeois. Bourgeois, you don't eat a whole big chunk of meat, and we always mix it with vegetables.
Yeah, one tiny piece of meat,
yes,
and like 20 baskets of vegetables in a big pot of rice.
Yeah, coming from the garden and the rice fields, yeah, the trees. And in fact, in America, in other parts of the world where I visit our communities, they always go out there and they pick fresh apples, small apples, green apples. They said these apples are not green, are not fresh to eat yet. They're small apples. Yeah. But these small apples actually is the replacement, the substitute for another fresh fruit in Cambodia, like the ketut, you know. And then you mix it, you pound it, and you put more fish. So, but with apple, green apples. That's great. Green grapes or whatever.
Yeah, so basically here in the U.S., if the apple is red... Yeah. We're ready to eat, and it's just super sweet. And then Cambodia, it's like, okay, if it's red, we're not interested.
Yeah.
We want it to be sour and green and unripened. That's a perfect piece of fruit.
Yeah, that's probably why my mom brings over like these hard avocados and forces them open and tries to feed them to me. I'm like, these aren't ready yet.
I was in Houston 2 days ago, and this man was so proud. He said, you know what, the first time I came here, I went to fish. And then I caught this small fish, because we eat small fish, you know, the smaller the better, yeah? And I was fined $500. I said, what did you do? Because I didn't look for the big fish, I looked for a small fish, I was fined $500. That's not the point in Cambodia. Yeah. You take whatever, because the river, the wherever there's water in Cambodia, there's a proverb that says, where there's water, there's fish.
Right.
Yeah.
You go around and you meet so many people, not just abroad, you know, but you also go, one thing I really appreciate what you do, you have your connection to the Cambodian diaspora, but the number one important thing to you is the Cambodians in Cambodia, that's where your heart is.
Yeah.
What would you say is, you know, what tell us a story of just something that just feels so representative of just Cambodians in general, but is very hopeful to how you see Cambodia going in the future.
You know, the hardest thing for me is for anyone to be in exile is the home. The base is there, grassroots. I've campaigned so many times. I won elections. This is my third time, so 15 years, but I was in politics before that. Each time is about the smile. I think of the smile, I think of the hope, I think of the kindness, I think of the simplicity of our people. I think of the warmth, I think of the open, even you go to a very, very poor family with nothing but a hut, but they will always have a mat, whether it's torn or not, a mat and a cup of tea. And it's there for you, for even to the enemy, there is always something. You stop and then you have something to eat or to drink. and begin a conversation, and then the whole village comes around, and that's how we are able, as an opposition party, we were able to win the campaign, because through grassroots movement from village to village, and we brought for 25 years we spread the seeds of democracy in Cambodia. And don't forget that Cambodia now is led for over 30 years, led by the same man who is basically running the country for himself and for his family. Very corrupt, and pushing people toward more and more dependency on foreign aid. And then that's where Cambodia is going forward to China, and that's not right. When we want economic investment, we want economic development, but we cannot forget our identity. We cannot give up our roots, and then we for surely want our people to be living with the freedom and liberty, and then it has to be grounded, development has to be grounded also with the democratic principles.
It's interesting, you know, when you bring up Hun Sen, our prime minister that has been in power over 30 years now. You've actually worked for him before.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I think I became a politician by accidental politician. And because I am a woman, at that time, there were very few women who were part of the women's movement, led the women's movement. I gathered huge number of women groups. And then at the Fourth World Conference on Women in 1995, I became very prominent, one of the prominent women. And so when I returned to Cambodia, the Prime Minister asked me to be his advisor on women's affairs. And then I went into politics and I won my seat. I became minister, which is the Secretary of the State, mm-hmm. Secretary for Women. Yeah. Then I had to work with the Prime Minister. I didn't concentrate too much on who he is, but I concentrated more on the mission, which is a mission to empower women, to bring women in Cambodia who have lost their education, deprived of education for so many years under the Khmer Rouge and after the occupation from Vietnam. We concentrated a lot on the women's empowerment in every sector, bringing women the knowledge, giving them the information, getting them into local politics so that they can stand and run for elections, and they won. And that was really the beginning of the women's movement and a new identity for Cambodian women without losing our national, our cultural values. So I changed this proverb that says in Cambodian, men are gold and women are just a white piece of cloth, to when women are precious gems. Because during the genocide, when women had to cross, go underground and cross rivers and all that, they brought their children with them. My mother, your mother, your grandmother, they kept their children inside. And I remember hearing stories when they had to cross over to the other side to be safe, or cross through a village that is deserted. They had to hold the children close to them so that, and then breastfeed them, although they ran out of breast milk because they were starving, but they still had, the women had the children. And that's why the work that I do is to pay back. I want to know where my mother died. For over 30 years, I still can't find my mother. I don't know where she is. And in return, I see my mission as giving women in Cambodia the opportunity, the chance. I look at you, Seda, here with Eric here. You are young. You are entrepreneurs, you are very successful, and I know when you started, it was difficult for your mom too in America, right?
That's right. Yeah. I think about it still all the time. And you know, I know Eric's mom too came here as an immigrant, as a single mom. So we both relate to that. One of my, I wouldn't say struggles, but one of my own personal, you know, thoughts is that, you know, for our Cambodian community, they came here as refugees.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a totally different struggle. It's not to say one is better or worse, but, you know, it's one that is unrecognized as far as, you know, the consequences of that as coming here as a refugee. You know, I mean, my dad's finally retired of one job, you know, my mom is, she has a very stable government job as well right now, but even that, it scares her every day. I just have to remind her that, you know, whatever happens to her, like, it's fine. You know, you're living with this generation. Our parents are in a generation of constant trauma. Yeah. Like, you know, the PTSD that's never addressed.
Of course, yeah.
So everything from, you know, forcing my, you know, for when she comes and yells at me that my kid's not drinking enough milk, I have to remind her, I'm like, hey, we're not in a refugee camp.
Yes,
refugee camp.
Exactly.
I think the nutrients are fine, but, you know, the trauma is still there very much.
Exactly. It's exactly that's what it is when I'm here and I'm welcomed in by families and Cambodian families in every home here. They keep on, like, a huge bowl of rice. I said, I can't finish the rice. No, a huge bowl of rice, 3 times a day. No, I can't. But it's true. And around the rice, there is always a conversation about rice. Always a conversation about, you know, remember during the genocide, how we had to look for even one grain of rice to survive. Many people were killed for just one handful of grains of rice because of the starvation.
Yeah, I mean, my uncle himself was captured. But, you know, my mom doesn't look at it in a way like, oh, my God, you know, I was captured and I was starving. The way she looks at it is just like, you know what? Your uncle, my brother, did not have the smarts like I did. He would always get caught stealing, you know. Yeah. He almost got killed for it. I mean, it's like a badge of honor for her when it comes to survival. That's to her, survival is life. So she never looks at it or talks about it in a way like, oh, you know, we were really hungry, you know, occasionally. Mm. But to her, it's... You know, they found a way to find the joy of being alive. Yeah. It's a very interesting thing about Cambodians. You know, it's a survival. It's the simple smile, the simplicity that they just seek. Mm-hmm. The trauma that still, you know, comes upon my generation. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm American born. My sister's a refugee as well. She was born in Kawadong, which is, to her, I call her the 80s baby, the 80s refugee babies. Mm-hmm. You know, I have several, you know, my sister, but cousins that I look up to that were 80s refugee babies. Mm. And I see a different personality in them. And then there's me, who's actually American born, and, you know, it's not addressed. Mm. So I think Cambodians have a long way to go as far as unraveling their own history, understanding the effects of the Khmer Rouge, you know, generations away. The type of people we have kind of become, you know. And I think it's so important because it really kind of influences our participation in how we can actually get Cambodia to a place where it's okay to have a radio show like this, you know, where the Cambodian daily is not shut down, you know, the upcoming election isn't threatened. And you know, I wonder, you know, where do you feel... You know, being in exile here and having the opportunities to reach out to the Cambodian communities here who really look up to you to provide us with sort of the guideline or the next steps to kind of figure out where do we go from here?
I still have to maintain the balance because our Cambodian communities here have lived so much, enjoyed so much freedom and liberties whatever they want, they can say. Whatever they want to say, they can say, you know. And then they say to me, why can't you do that? Why can't we do that in Cambodia? I say, yes, that's what we want to do. But it's not there yet. That's why we have to go through this struggle, which is building democracy. And democracy is, you don't do it in a day. It takes generations. And demanding democracy, that's not the way to go, because then you set yourself up for expectations, false expectations. And that's what, and they want Hun Sen, the prime minister, to step down now. Now means violence. and we are so much against violence. We are so much against destroying Cambodia again. We are for democracies, even though it's going to take a lot. It's been taking so long, but we have to say, unless the people in Cambodia own that the know the value own. And are part of the democratization process. Even if Hun Sen steps down today, tomorrow there will be another Hun Sen. Yeah, if we don't have the democracy rooted in every village, then the change is not going to be sustainable. So for the Cambodians outside of Cambodia, we also have to explain to them that this is not America. Even in America now, there are a lot of setbacks, yeah, for democracy. It's not static. It's not. It evolves all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think, like, as we kind of tail into the end here, what can I think young Cambodian Americans do to help, right?
I think, first of all, they have to be very informed. There are a lot of movies, documentaries, news out there in English. And then to look at reality. Where do you want to help? What is important is to ask Cambodian Americans, you have to speak out about Cambodia in your community, in your schools, and take action by writing to your Congress, members of Congress about the situation in Cambodia. And then now is Facebook, social media. Say something, write something, because you are free here to say, while Cambodian youth in Cambodia can be in jail. We have colleagues who's going to be in jail for 30 years for standing and demanding freedom of speech. So they are in jail. Think about them. Then say something about Cambodia and what you want Cambodia to be. Ask Cambodian Americans.
Thank you. So I always kind of like to ask this question, but tell us your favorite Cambodian snack.
Snacks? Oh, I have a terrible habit of wanting fried.
I know you mentioned a lot of morning fish, but...
Yeah, tell us about the junk food.
Yeah, tell us about the
fried
junk food.
Fried bananas, fried shrimps, fried fish, all this, all
anything
the fried.
Anything
that's fried because it's crunchy is so great. But also, we never will not, cannot end this show without saying the sweetness of mangoes and durian, that famous fruit. Yes.
Cool. This was an amazing show today, and what a lucky opportunity to have you here on Full Service Radio. And I know my wife and I feel super blessed every time we get to see you, and know that you're safe, and we get to help you along with your journey, because we feel a part of it. And I know my wife, I know that we will always do anything you need. So
thank you so much. You have given me the comfort of the home that I left in Cambodia, but I will go back.
And we will be excited for the day.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.